before tonight. And the people didn't believe him. And they began to laugh at him. And they began to mock him. And they began to say, it ain't gonna rain. It's gonna rain, 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 it's gonna
rain, it's gonna rain, it's gonna rain, it's gonna rain, it's gonna rain, it's gonna rain, it's gonna rain, it's gonna rain, it's gonna rain, it's gonna rain, it's gonna rain, it's gonna rain, it's gonna rain, it's gonna rain, it's gonna rain, it's gonna rain, it's gonna rain, it's gonna rain, it's gonna rain, it's gonna rain, it's gonna rain, it's gonna rain, it's gonna rain, it's gonna The choir had broken into the parlor and was rehearsing for the Habit Feast again. Individual lines filtered up through the mossy floor like cyanide fumes into a gas chamber, and I gagged as much from the analogy as for the unevenly crooned parts that suggested the tune's tonal center was at odds with itself and a serious intermelodic skirmish was imminent. One line in particular that lay in the crack between tenor and anti-tenor caught my ear and dragged it toward an unwelcome cadence. Every couple of measures, the tune broke another rule of harmony and replaced it with some new musical dictum that only its mother could love. The song itself, or whatever it was, it also smacked of the sub-vocalized growl that apprehensive electronic dogs make when their feeding circuits are compromised. Seemed to be steadily reinventing itself, the patent for which could only exist in the Blue Perfect. The melody shifted abruptly into reverse, bumped into itself coming the other way, and collapsed into a pile of tone clusters that quickly dispersed like lava lamp hunters at a yard sale.
What?
Like what? What?
Lava lamp hunters?
At a yard sale.
Lava lamp hunters. That sounds like a good name for an actor.
Lava Lamp Hunter?
Yes.
Or Lava Lamp Hunter?
Either one.
Or Yard Sale.
Yard Sale, yes. Yeah.
The singers, many of them unused to choral patterns that fragmented fractally from top to bottom, breathed a sigh of relief in a distant cousin of A minor. Somewhere deep in the oubliette of my mind, oubliette. Oubliette?
It's got a couple of T's in it. I think it might be an oubliette.
Oubliette? Oh. I thought you didn't pronounce it in that other foreign language.
Well, there are extra of them. Whenever there are extra of them that skitter in toward the end of the word, you make noise with them.
Oh, oubliette?
Yes, that's right.
Of my mind.
Of your mind.
A little used hemisphere dominant, a little used left hemisphere dominant circuit clicked on and ventriloquized a similar sound pattern that evoked a long forgotten yearning for a wall hanging in a Truth or Consequences New Mexico motel room. What at first blush looked like a simple clowns on velvet motif, transmogrified, with the aid of abuse of an unregulated substance, into annihilation of the universe by vacuum decay.
What?
What, what?
I see. Subject and predicate trouble in my mind. I had trouble following what you just said.
The subject is...
What?
What? Stuck there at the front where subjects often sit, unattended.
Unattended by a question mark at the end, which is expected somehow.
Oh, yes.
Oh, you were saying that what at first blush looked like simple clowns on velvet motif. Yes.
Transmogrified with the aid of abuse from another, into annihilation of the universe by vacuum decay, period, end quote, full stop. Entitled Concatenation of the Cosmos... It, too, had a song to sing, a kind of hum, a drone, an incessant buzzing that seemed to emanate from a painful clam sore on my lowing back. The clowns regrouped and turned into smart dogs playing poker. Then the buzz sounded again, this time accompanied by an attention-getting 50-gigawatt electric shock.
a sound I cannot make. It's not in my repertoire of...
That does pretty good. Yeah. I awoke suddenly from a troubled reverie to find that... yes.
To find that
Mr. Chiropractor, my interactive CD-ROM therapy game, was signaling that it was time to remove the electrodes from my latissimus dorsi. I did so, and like a first-year piano student who drew as his proficiency exam 4 minutes 33 seconds, was rewarded with instant relief. A block of shape-shifting data flashed across the monitor screen that instructed me to reattach the wires to these smart dogs, which I interpreted to mean my feet. The two big toes vaguely resembled a pooch muzzle, so I clipped the wires there too and pressed the enter button on the keyboard. I watched calmly as the phalanges began to vibrate, shake, and then smoke. But when they burst into a painful, unrehearsed rendition of the concatenation song, I reckoned that something was amiss.
No doubt. Those phalanges smoking is the thing that troubles me a whole lot. You'd think they'd read the Surgeon General's warning.
Yeah, right. The collateral chiropractic illusion dissolved into a great caterwauling, again issuing from the parlor below as the choir had another go at the habit feast tune. This time, helped largely by the absence of the melodeum, it seemed to make sense. The tune lurched from one improbable cadence to another. Time slowed. Even slower than that. I felt my reality gradually convert to energy, then matter, which it didn't really, because it was all part of a concatenation to this 210th episode of Calvos and Damien's New Music Bazaar, whose context would... Here comes another embedded clause to muck up the subject predicate. Whose context would, if I had the patience to follow the data string to its logical conclusion, loop back to the ventriloquistic caterwauling of Calvos.
That's me. Hey, that was, in fact, caterwauling indeed. We're listening to, if you didn't know it by now, It's Gonna Rain by Steve Reich. Let's listen to a little bit more, then we'll get back with some sort of caterwauling explanation, something theoretical with many syllables. That was quick.
Yeah, well, you have found the cadence and you went with it.
I did. That was the first of the two halves of It's Gonna Rain by Steve Reich. Ah, and gosh, did you say the 200 what episode?
Tenth.
210th episode.
That sounds like a good number for a theme.
It does. Our theme today, by the way, is recontextualization.
Do you mean taking things out of context and putting them somewhere else?
In a new context. Yes, very, very well thought through.
Good.
And we're particularly going to talk about that because of our guest today who doesn't talk about it. That's Charles Amerkanian.
Ah.
He's one of the early, what's the word, I guess, apostles of of the use of text as a musical element all by itself. There were those who used it independently as Luciano Berio, where he used text and you lost track of what it said because the syllables were treated differently. And then there were people like Amerkanian who reworked the text in such a way that although it was absolutely clear what the words were, they no longer made sense as words and became objects in a musical sense. More later about that.
Mm-hmm.
Let's hear something.
No, I mean, yes, of course. What
I think we need to hear some early item to get a flavor for...
We just did.
Yes, It's Gonna Rain by Steve. So we did, but we need something such as Luciano Berio's sequenza for solo voice, kind of to give this recontextualization some context.
Yeah. Now, at this very moment, are you sub-vocalizing or are we hearing something else underneath?
Oh, as yes, we are. I was hoping you wouldn't ask that question just yet.
Well, then forget I asked it. Just go ahead and play the sequenza, and maybe you should tell a little about it, the history of this piece, and perhaps your personal affiliation with it.
Well, I can't tell too much about the history of it. I know that it was written for Kathy Babarian, the wife of the composer,
yes.
an extraordinary vocal improviser as well as reader of complex scores, which this was. The sequenza scores invent notation because there are things simply not... Well, back up. The purpose of notation, in a sense, is to abbreviate something that would take a lot of words to describe. The symbols we see regularly, stop signs and yield signs, are those sorts of things. They don't need the words on them to tell us what they mean. They're an abbreviation for a lot. In the case of music notation, we have little dots on the page, and those are symbols that mean play a certain... produce a certain sound at a certain length of time based on your knowledge of the required keys to be pressed or fingers to be placed or vocal cords to be stretched. That seems obvious,
seems
easy. But how do you tell someone you need them to make an intake of breath? How do you tell them to cover their mouth with their hand as they sing? These are easily said in words, but if you have to do it a lot of times, say 20 times in a piece, you don't want to say, cover your hands with your mouth at this point, and then again, uncover your mouth with your hand, especially if it's along with things like tongue wagging and mouth clicks and everything else. You end up with a jumble of words. It doesn't help you understand what's to be done. So Berio, along with many composers during the mid-century, invented symbols to help. The intake of breath, a kind of a note head with an arrow pointing in one direction, exhaling, a different kind of note head with an arrow, a symbol for the tongue click, and so forth. He had a whole repertoire explained at the beginning of the score, and when you heard the music, it made an incredibly continuous sound. And in this case, he used text, and because of the way he used it in combination with these symbols, it totally loses its apparent meaning in the orchestration of the sounds with the voice. I'll skip the personal interest for the moment. Maybe mention that after we hear it. Here is Luciano Berio's Sequenza for Solo Voice, as sung by Kathy Babarian.
You were Sequenza 3 for solo voice by Luciano Berio, that dating from a long time ago, gosh.
But who's doing something like that now? That's a spectacular...
It's a brilliant, absolutely brilliant piece. And I actually think there's a lot of work going on in that. We just hear it differently because in the interim we've had a lot of electronification, so much of the vocal work, quite beautiful vocal work, we can hear in odd places like the backgrounds of commercials.
Oh, sure.
Yes. Yeah. No, seriously. But we'll get to a little bit about that later, too. In the meantime, we're going to listen to something from American Text Sound Pieces. This particularly because Charles Amerkanian, who's our guest today, this was probably the piece which made him famous. This is called Just. This was issued about 25 years ago, American Text Sound Pieces, and it uses the words rainbow, chug, bandit, and bomb. American Text Sound Pieces, Just, by Charles Amerkanian.
Bandit. Rainbow bandit. Rainbow chug bandit. Rainbow chug bandit. Bandit. Rainbow bandit. Rainbow chug bandit. Rainbow chug bandit. Bandit. Rainbow bandit. Rainbow chug bandit. Rainbow chug bandit. Bandit. Rainbow bandit.
Rainbow bandit.
Rainbow chug bandit.
Rainbow chug bandit.
Bandit.
Rainbow bandit.
Rainbow chug bandit.
Rainbow chug bandit.
Bandit.
Rainbow bandit.
Rainbow chug bandit.
Rainbow chug bandit.
Bandit.
Rainbow bandit.
Rainbow chug bandit.
Rainbow chug bandit.
Bandit.
Rainbow bandit.
Rainbow chug bandit.
Rainbow chug bandit.
Bandit.
Rainbow bandit.
Rainbow chug bandit.
Rainbow chug bandit.
Bandit.
Rainbow bandit.
Rainbow chug bandit.
Rainbow chug bandit.
Bandit.
Rainbow bandit.
Rainbow chug bandit.
Rainbow chug bandit.
Bandit.
Rainbow bandit.
Rainbow chug bandit.
Rainbow chug bandit.
Bandit.
Rainbow bandit.
Rainbow chug bandit.
Rainbow chug bandit.
Bandit.
Rainbow bandit.
Rainbow chug bandit.
Rainbow chug bandit.
Bandit.
Rainbow bandit.
Rainbow chug bandit.
Rainbow chug bandit.
Bandit.
Rainbow bandit.
Rainbow chug bandit.
Rainbow chug bandit.
Bandit. Bandit.
Rainbow chug 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 bomb, bandit bomb, rainbow chug bomb, bandit chug bomb, bandit chug bomb, bandit chug bomb, bandit chug rainbow chug chug bomb, chug bomb, chug bomb, rainbow chug chug bomb, bandit bomb, rainbow chug bomb, bandit chug bomb, bandit chug bomb, bandit chug bomb, bandit chug rainbow chug chug bomb, chug bomb, chug bomb, rainbow chug chug bomb, bandit bomb, rainbow chug bomb, bandit chug bomb, bandit chug bomb, bandit chug bomb, bandit chug rainbow chug chug bomb, chug bomb, chug bomb. Rainbow chug 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 bomb, bandit bomb, rainbow chug bomb, bandit chug bomb, bandit chug bomb, bandit chug bomb,
rainbow bandit chug, rainbow chug chug chug,
rainbow bandit
chug bomb,
rainbow bandit,
rainbow chug chug,
rainbow bandit,
bandit,
rainbow, rainbow,
rainbow,
rainbow,
rainbow,
rainbow bandit
chug, rainbow chug chug chug,
rainbow bandit
chug chug,
rainbow bandit
bomb,
rainbow bandit,
rainbow chug,
rainbow, rainbow, rainbow
bandit bomb,
rainbow,
rainbow
bomb,
rainbow bandit
chug,
rainbow chug chug chug,
rainbow bandit
bomb,
rainbow bandit,
rainbow chug,
rainbow bandit
chug bomb,
rainbow, rainbow,
rainbow chug chug,
rainbow
rainbow bandit,
rainbow bandit
chug, rainbow chug chug chug,
rainbow bandit
chug bomb,
rainbow bandit
chug bomb,
rainbow bandit
chug, rainbow,
rainbow, rainbow, rainbow
bomb,
rainbow, rainbow, rainbow bandit chug, rainbow chug 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 chug, rainbow bandit,
rainbow bandit,
rainbow bandit,
rainbow, rainbow, rainbow,
rainbow, rainbow,
rainbow bandit chug, rainbow chug 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 chug,
rainbow bandit,
rainbow bandit,
rainbow bandit,
rainbow, rainbow, rainbow,
rainbow, rainbow,
rainbow bandit chug, rainbow chug 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 chug,
rainbow bandit,
rainbow bandit,
rainbow bandit,
rainbow, rainbow, rainbow,
rainbow, rainbow,
rainbow chug bandit bomb,
rainbow chug bandit bomb,
rainbow chug 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 bomb,
rainbow chug bandit,
rainbow chug bomb,
rainbow bandit
bomb,
rainbow bandit
bomb,
rainbow bandit bomb,
rainbow bandit bomb,
bandit bandit bandit,
rainbow chug,
rainbow chug,
rainbow chug,
rainbow
bandit,
rainbow chug,
rainbow chug,
rainbow chug, rainbow chug,
rainbow chug,
bandit bandit,
rainbow chug,
rainbow
chug,
rainbow
chug, rainbow
chug,
rainbow chug,
rainbow chug,
rainbow chug,
rainbow chug,
rainbow chug,
rainbow chug,
rainbow chug,
rainbow chug,
rainbow chug,
rainbow chug,
rainbow chug,
rainbow chug,
rainbow chug,
rainbow chug,
rainbow chug,
rainbow chug,
rainbow chug,
rainbow chug,
rainbow chug,
rainbow chug, Rainbow bandit bomb, rainbow chug bomb, bandit bomb, bandit, 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 rainbow bandit bomb, rainbow bandit bomb, rainbow chug bomb, bandit bomb, bandit, 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 rainbow bandit bomb, rainbow bandit bomb, rainbow chug bomb, bandit bomb, bandit, 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 rainbow bandit bomb, rainbow bandit bomb, rainbow chug bomb, bandit bomb, bandit, 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 rainbow bandit bomb, rainbow bandit bomb, rainbow chug bomb, bandit bomb, bandit, 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 rainbow bandit bomb, rainbow bandit bomb, rainbow chug bomb, bandit bomb, bandit, 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 rainbow bandit bomb, rainbow bandit bomb, rainbow chug bomb, bandit bomb, bandit, 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 rainbow bandit bomb, r
by Charles Amerikanian. Our guest in just about 3 minutes here on the Bazaar, that was from 1972, and
still resonates today.
Well, kind of does, yeah.
Sure it does.
I mean, you know, we'd expect lots of more processing today.
Heck no, I like it. Clean. Analog.
This is funny because this particular LP, long out of print, called 10 plus 2, 12 American Tech Sound Pieces, which was produced by Charles Amerikanian, has the program notes inside, and it points out that, at least in this time, 27 years ago, it says, he is currently Sound Sensitivity Information Director, formerly music director of KPFA Radio in Berkeley, California. From which, by the way, he just retired. He's finally given up that position. So, decontextualization. Does anybody remember what those four words were? Or who cares what they meant? Well, in just a minute, our interview with Charles Amerikanian.
James Bond here to let you know that your dial must not be touched. You're listening to Calvos and Damien's New Music Bazaar, your red alert for new music.
James Bond will be our guest coming up in a few weeks.
Live or on?
Live. I mean, I think live. We'll just see. I mean, if he actually makes his way here. It is the Calvos and Damien New Music Bazaar on WGDR Plainfield. Shall we get to that interview?
Well, I think first.
Yes?
Yeah, get to it first. Other than that, yeah.
Yeah?
Sure.
Sure. Text. Decontextualized text.
Maybe we'll do a live one.
On we go. Yes, first of all.
What are your names?
Calvos and Damien.
Radio persona?
Which is which?
Either. Usually matter. Calvos, Damien, Damien, Calvos, Calvos. We can all be Calvos.
Yeah, guest, Calvos, Damien, guest. As long as it ends up with guest pointing in your direction, we're okay.
Okay.
And our guest, you know, some people are sort of known by pieces which go back so far that they hate to have it mentioned, so we can mention it.
You mean Bolero?
Yes, Bolero, yes.
You know when I wrote that?
To tell.
I was a percussionist, and I thought, well, the orchestra really needs something that will hypnotize them, you know, like
saber dance.
Band. And so I set to working on this piece, and it was one of my biggest successes, but it keeps getting played. I mean, the royalties are good.
The royalties are great. And so we have Claude Ravel here. No, actually...
What? It's not Aaron Cacciatore?
No, it's not Aaron Cacciatore. It's close, though. It's closer, yeah. Our guest today is Charles Amerikanian, who has been certainly dogged by... and was dogged
and
not dodged, but almost dodged. Was it dodge? Who called out Rainbow Chug Bandit Bomb. Which goes back to the American Tech Sound Pieces LP that we are proud possessors of back when it was new.
Wow.
Yes, we bought it when it was new.
You guys don't look that old.
Yeah.
We travel in parallel universes.
That's what it is.
It came out in 1973, and you were both in your 20s.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. And so...
Where'd you find it? At a record store? I mean,
yes. Actually, at the time we were living in New Jersey, and I found my copy in Harmony House in Union, New Jersey.
Terrific.
Which is the only place one could buy new music in, you know, almost all of New Jersey at the time.
And I found his copy I think that's the same copy.
Yeah, the same copy.
Right.
And then there were a couple of, it was an amazing time. Anyway, so we have always been fascinated by that text piece, of course, because of the sound of it. But following you over the years and wondering what you have been up to, we know you do the radio thing, but a lot of your stuff doesn't trickle this way. So why don't you sort of catch us up, because we've got 25 years to catch up on in the next half hour.
Well, I have been continuing to write word pieces using syntactically unrelated groupings of words that have a strong rhythmic pattern. But I'm also now working with the Kurzweil synthesizer in samples. I used a Synclaver for many years. I worked at the studio of Henry Kaiser. Henry's a good friend who is a guitarist, lives in Oakland, performs everywhere. And
you're a fan of Henry Kaiser.
Fred Frith Henry Kaiser collection.
Well, Henry has this very open way of dealing with people he was interested in, which is you go to his house and they'll say, well, try this. And so I got interested in his new Synclaver, which he just got kind of 10 years ago. And we started to put samples into it that I would select, and then Henry would say, well, here's one way we can do this, and here's another way. And basically, we collaborated on a bunch of pieces together that he, where if I got stuck, I'd call Henry into the next room and say, Henry, what thing would go good here? And he'd try something. He'd smash his forearm down on the keyboard or play a sequence of tones that were from samples he knew that I didn't know were in his memory. And a number of pieces erupted from that. That was a very fruitful period for me.
What kind of samples were you taking? Were they your own samples, material that you had sampled yourself? Yeah.
Mostly, yes. I would go out in the field and record hummingbirds and footsteps or toilets flushing. Ambience.
Always a favorite. Yes. Toilet flush is always a favorite.
Big favorite. And the way I worked, I wanted my pieces to have something of my own in there. And if you just take the samples that are built into a synthesizer, you end up with somebody else's piece. So that's what I did. I would record things everywhere, and I'd bring them to Henry's, load them into the memory, and then if I got stuck, there would be something that somebody else loaded into his memory. And the cooperative arrangement with Henry Kaiser was that if you used his Synclaver, you had to leave your samples in his memory so he could use them in one of his pieces. So my samples turn up in his pieces, and they turn up in a bunch of his friends' pieces. And I, once was stuck, and I said, what have you got for this place? And he says, here's something, and it was great. It was a guy crying. The Russian jazz pianist whose name I forget, that Henry worked with for a while, lived in the Soviet Union, and then came over here. So I have his crying, and he's crunching an apple, and a couple of other guitar sounds from Henry that keep getting thrown in my pieces. But the point of it is that that I like to work with sounds that have a real personality and that are recorded close up, so you really get the image to be beautiful. If you record a sound from the distance we're recording now, it's quite different from
recording at this distance, which makes a completely different sound.
And so that is the sense of scale that I like to work with in music.
And it's obvious you're not carrying around a Wallen sack with a 77DX RCA microphone. Using
I just use a portable DAT machine like Gore's over there. What is that, a D7?
M1.
M1.
That's a next generation machine.
That's much newer.
Yeah.
I had to buy one because I was going to Armenia to record a piece there. And there's no electricity in Armenia except between 7 and 8 a.m., at least when I was there. They now have it, but it was completely blocked out because of the embargo and because of a war that Armenia is carrying on with Azerbaijan.
Right.
So I had to get a battery-powered DAT machine, and that was the only way to survive. But now that, the existence of the portable tape recorder has really changed the face of music a lot. At first, you had Lou Ferrari walking around with a Nagra, which is a great
right.
heavy thing.
Right.
Who worked in radio in those days in the 60s would have shoulder injuries that would last a lifetime from carrying those machines. And now you have the machines the size of a cigarette pack and good microphones, and you can really bring home sounds of the symphony orchestra on one little
right.
cigarette size machine and a microphone.
Do you use different microphones for different recordings?
I'm not really a nut about that kind of stuff. I tend to take the same stereo mic around with me. I think it's an Audio Technica. I forgot it. And whatever it records well is what I use in my pieces. So I haven't used parabolic reflectors or gotten into really expensive high-end microphones, no.
Let's back up a little bit for the audience and explain what this kind of creation is. When you create a piece of samples of sound, it's very different. We'll be hearing several of them, but it's very different from either constructing something out of those things which have musical implications already, a flute or a violin, or different from creating something which has an attached meaning, like a sentence. But this is somewhere in a different place. How do you work with this? How does an audience unfamiliar with it listen to it? What clues do you give them? Let me just also back up to today. You gave a talk here at Dartmouth in which you explained briefly where the materials for a piece came from before you played it, which very much changed how at least I listened to the piece. So for our audience, we'll be hearing some of your pieces today. How do they begin?
Well, if they're in your audience, they probably already have begun, I'm afraid. If you're still listening, ladies and gentlemen, these pieces are simply dreamscapes or kind of internal fantasies that occur when you put together sequences of sounds that aren't normally heard together. And so I guess you just need to close down the visual apparatus in your brain and really just listen. Because if you can do that, you'll become involved in the music. If you don't, if you're going to walk around the house and type up a computer and do three other things while this is playing, it won't be so interesting, to tell you the truth. So it's important to just start from zero and listen as if a story is being told, but there are no words. I guess that's one way to deal with it. In the work that I do now, most of the sounds are still recognizable, so you can generally tell where they came from. I'm not distorting them so much that you can't imagine what they are originally. And most importantly, they're acoustic sounds. They're not generated electronically. And so they have complexity to them in their overtone structure. And they have a timbre which has a bite to it rather than simply being mirror-like, very glossy electronic sounds, which I don't like very much, to tell you the truth. I find them hard for musical. They don't convey a lot of musical interest for me, even if they're arranged very nicely. And I don't know why I came to that conclusion, but I just have.
You've been in radio for a long time, so this is also a familiar medium through that. Did you come to radio through that, or did you come to it through radio, or did it happen at the same time?
Well, I was composing before I was ever involved in radio. I came to radio because I liked new music, and I knew that there was a radio station in Berkeley that was looking for a music director, and that there was a tradition at KPFA, which is celebrating its 50th anniversary this month, April 1999, for somebody to continue this tradition. So I would never have gotten in radio if it hadn't been for that station.
Mm-hmm.
But
there's such a strong relationship between sort of the sound piece, the sound portrait, today at least, in radio. I mean, you can't turn on, National Public Radio without hearing this kind of very, very much produced collage of sounds behind a voiceover of something.
Yeah, news stories, essays, Everything is...
Are you responsible for that?
No, certainly not. I don't think so. I think radio drama, traditional radio drama, is the source for that. And that the portable tape recorder is the source for that. But I was working the sounds on tape before I was involved in radio, and I just didn't have very good equipment in those days.
But those, of course, are sounds which are clearly associated usually with a text story. In your case, you're creating what you called a dreamscape, was that your word, or a landscape, or something
like
that?
Yes, it's sort of a soundscape. You're walking through an environment, and a number of sounds are coming at you, and the sequence is up to the composer. That's what makes it art. But it doesn't tell you anything literal. If it said something literal, it might be a news story, but it wouldn't be much of an artistic standard. So, look, do you want art, or do you want news?
Yeah.
We'd like to get some news out of you.
Yeah. But you did something interesting again today for our listeners. You before you played one of the pieces during your lecture, you had the lights go down. Do you prefer to have other input, other distractions gone? And if our listeners are about to hear a piece of yours now, as they are, would you prefer them to have it heard through headphones?
It depends. If you got great loudspeakers in your environment, it would be just as good to turn them up all the way and turn out the lights. But definitely turn out the lights. That's very important. I know. What hour are you on the air?
We're in the afternoon, 2:30 to 4:30 in the afternoon. Well, but our shows are archived, so people might be hearing them at any time on the internet.
I see. Well, I did do performances for years with Carol Long, my wife, who does beautiful projections of slides that are slowly dissolved by computers controlled with several projectors. But those were intentionally done for that purpose. These that we're going to play now are to be heard in the dark.
Mm-hmm.
So, you say DAC?
We don't.
You don't.
You mean play in the DAC? Yeah,
in the DAC.
Yeah. No, I don't think we say that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, then.
No, not us. We don't say that sort of thing.
We're west a few states of that.
Yeah.
You are. Okay.
Yeah. Currently, we're recording you one state east of where we normally broadcast.
Right? Oh, I see.
So we have a more western accent.
I see.
Yeah.
Well, then, do darken the hall.
Yeah,
and,
maybe.
Headphones would be fine.
Okay, good. Our guest today is Charles Amerkanian. Were you ever in? I have vague memories of you being in eastern Pennsylvania in the 1970s. Were you in that area of the world?
Eastern Pennsylvania, '70s. I can't remember.
Vague memories of you being part of a festival in New Hope, Pennsylvania. And then in, well?
I was in New Hope in '65, but I was 20 years old and my parents were driving me through.
Oh, well, so there
see,
we
that's funny. I don't think I was there.
I just seem to remember you having performances in that area, but it might have been Philadelphia because we'd spent some time traveling down that way.
Huh.
Yeah. Well, not important. Just thought we might come up with some clever anecdote out of that. I guess not. Let's hear something. What's a good choice?
Well, how long is your program?
As long as you'd like it to be.
Well, I think it would be great for people to hear a composition I did called Walking Tune, which is a portrait of Percy Grainger,
right,
whom I never knew, but it was a concert pianist born in Australia, where some of these sounds were recorded, and who lived most of his life in White Plains, New York. He was a pianist, as I said, traveled around, played in the 30s and 40s, virtually everywhere in the U.S.
Unusual composer because he's best known for these folk arrangements and compositions, but he did experimental music as well.
That's correct.
Very striking, unusual pieces, and I think those people used to listening to the Percy Grainger of the you know, in the garden type pieces are very surprised to hear some of the rest of this.
Well, and I got to think that he worked the last 20 years of his life trying to make a synthesizer, which never quite worked out. And just as he died in, 1961, Moog came out with the Moog synthesizer, and there were other possibilities he could have used. It was kind of sad. And I began to wonder what it would have meant to him to have a Synclavier in his house. I've been to his house in White Plains. It's loaded with instruments. It's still there. You can go visit it. But Seven Cromwell Place, fascinating place. But I decided to take some of these sounds I gathered in Australia and mix them with the sounds of various ambiences that he might have participated in. There's a long section of Carol and myself walking on gravel down a long path in Utah that was leading up to a hot springs. And I remembered he wrote a piece called Walking Tune, which was a piano piece, and which he made while he was hiking. He loved to hike. He was an outdoorsman. He was a vegetarian. He was a health nut. And he sometimes got arrested while walking on the train track between one city and another where he was giving piano concerts. He wanted to walk for health reasons, but he was arrested for being a vagrant many times. And that's the funny thing about him. He would also walk into a concert hall, and instead of coming out from the wings to play music, he'd run in from the back of the hall and leap up feet first onto the stage. That kind of thing.
Peter Schickele wrote Peter Hubach ahead of time.
Yes, certainly.
You can buy about 25
certainly.
So Percy was a real character, but he had a dark side, which was that he was bisexual. He was involved in sadomasochism. He had people whip him, and
that's only sort of recently become public knowledge.
Right.
I'm not sure how many people in the composers community knew about that before.
Well, anybody who would have read John Bird's biography of him would have known about it, but that came out 10, 15 years ago now. So this image of this guy, right, wrote this very sweet music, these arrangements of folk songs that were just awfully pretty, turns out to have a dark side and kind of another life. So in the middle of my composition, there's another dark side that comes out, and I use some bass guitar samples and other sounds that, and a squeaky gate I recorded in Australia to portray that other side of him. And throughout the music, there's a recurring musical phrase from a J.C. Bach aria with a counter tenor singing. And this is echoed in a violin pattern that repeats the same sequence of tones. In memory of the fact that Granger took a lot of pieces by Bach and arranged them, and other people. And also because this sort of arose while I was thinking about Granger and working on the Sinclair with the piece. I'm trying to think of some other images. There are sounds of, let's see, my violinist was this interesting woman. She had many talents. She could also do Donald Duck talking. Exactly. Yeah, I'd be too, but I couldn't do it. So I said, well, say something, I'll record that. And she said, oh, I can't think of what to say. I said, well, just talk about Mozart. And she said, Mozart! So it went on and on and on. So she got in there with her Donald Duck speech. And anyway, this is a very contemplative piece for me. I mean, it's a long, spacey. Very relaxed and spacey, and very emotional, and kind of a new turn for me. But it's 26 minutes long, so
we're gonna hear it.
So the thing is, the good thing is once you turn out the lights, you get to now lie down on the floor and listen to it too, because that's even better if you can really surrender yourself to the sweet sounds of this piece of music. I think you'll enjoy it.
Well, we'll do our station ID right now. You're listening to the Calvus and Damian New Music Bazaar on WGDR Plainfield. Please turn down those lights, and we'll hear this composition by Charles Amerikanian, Walking Tune.
Ah! Not Thank you.
Wake up, our audience, wake up.
That was Walking Tune by our guest Charles Amerikanian.
Beautiful piece, isn't it?
It's a gorgeous piece.
Well, let's listen to it again.
Well, it's available on Starkland, which is a small company in Boulder, Colorado. And Laurie Anderson wrote the introductory notes for the CD. I was very curious to see what she would write. And it was kind of nice that she took the anthropological point of view that I was gathering sounds from a culture and putting them together. And in a way, that's true.
So this could go on the next Voyager spacecraft.
Could well do.
Well, you know, you were talking about a very interesting thing earlier today, the little 50-second clip. That now, explain how that came about again, the United States-France clip. Was that a commission? How did that come about?
It was a commission that was channeled through the American Center in Paris, which no longer exists, but it was...
Paris?
In Paris.
No, Paris doesn't. No longer exists.
It was there last I checked.
Oh, okay.
But the American Center was not.
Ah!
So sorry to be
unclear. I've been in Paris.
But the idea was that a rock and roll station called Radio Luxembourg wanted to have 60-second long spots devoted to artists. And so they came up with a plan to commission 6 French and 6 American composers, and each of them had to portray the complex ethnic array of cultures that comprise both French and American populations. So I began to think about what I could do for this, and I hit on the idea of taking the traditional musics of the former French colonies and former French colonies, and then some Cajun music from America and some Native American music from Arizona. And all of these things were blended together to make this 60-second long piece called Chululu, which is the title of one of the pieces, I think, from Tahiti, which is a former French colony.
Will we have an opportunity to hear that? Can we get a copy of that, or is that...
Oh, sure, yeah,
only
no.
Oh, well,
no,
we,
no, no, I can get
we
that.
Can hear that. You asked during the lecture what people in the audience would think of doing that if someone had commissioned them to do
did
that.
Did you come up with an idea?
I didn't know if I should have said it.
Well, so what I came up with was that I would just make a recording of the sound of a can of Franco-American spaghetti being opened and then modify that. What was yours?
My idea was the sound of a guillotine in the back of a Dodge pickup truck.
Ooh, that's a good one. I like that. I like it.
Driving down a rutted road.
Yes. Well, let's hear that. Chululu.
Okay.
Charles Amerikani.
Chululu.
A proper word.
Or whatever that is. A little electronic. What is that tune?
Lovely counterpoint. Who knows?
I know the tune, but I can't identify it. What is the tune?
We'll play it again and the audience.
Sing softly.
Killing me
softly.
That's it. Oh, gosh. The kind of music you expect to have in an Indian restaurant in Hanover, New Hampshire.
That's right.
Yes. Charles Amerikanian, where are you going with your work? I mean, we're in an era now. I ask you the question because we're in an era now where what you were a pioneer at has become possible for absolutely everyone to do. So where are you veering toward?
Well, right now I've just been to London and recorded a whole bunch of historical player piano roles. And I had the pianolist, Rex Lawson, perform the music in several ways. So he would take a segment of Stravinsky's Petrushka, and he would play a segment of it, and then play it slower, and then play it with stops between. And now I'm taking all these samples, and I'm mixing them together in a big collage piece, telescoping the history of the player piano, using Antheil's roles and Nancaro and... let's see. Roles made in the 20s by Antheil, Honegger, Ernst Toch.
Gershwin?
Yes, I have some Gershwin in there.
Joplin did some roles too, right?
Did he?
That was early, though.
Don't have any of those. Well, I only had a collection of 10,000 to choose from.
Oh, I'm sorry.
It was kind of not much of a selection. I've loaded all these into my Kurzweil, and I'm playing around with the idea of how to put them together, how to string them together. And it's become a challenge because all of the things have such strong profiles. But
what do you mean by such strong profiles?
Well, let's say you're a composer and you want to write a piece of music. And you take somebody else's music. In fact, you take 62 other people's music. Each time you depress a key, you've got Honegger or Gershwin or Stravinsky.
Yeah.
And they're so recognizable. So now how do you treat that so that it becomes your thing and it's something that gives a new view of it, and a view that probably you would be the only person who would give? So I tried various strategies. I tried making them like word pieces where you'd have a little bit of this and a little bit of that, very fast transformations between one and the other. But the harmonies prevent that from working sometimes. So you had to find pieces in related key signatures, and then the rhythms were wrong. It's become a big deal. I've been working on it now for 2 years. I'm almost stuck, but not quite. I'm forcing myself to finish this thing. So that's what I'm doing now. It's being done for the West German radio, and they're waiting for it for a year now. They keep calling and saying, well, do you think you'll be finished soon? I don't know. But
So they're still in the commissioning business, West German radio?
Yeah.
Wow.
And then I just finished an octet for ratchets. You know what the ratchet is? It's this thing you turn.
Orchestral ratchets.
Orchestral ratchets.
Oh, those are wonderful.
Fully amplified.
Fully amplified. They need it.
They need amplification in a big hall.
A ratchet.
In French, octet pour Cressel.
Cressel?
Cressel.
What a nice word.
It's terrific.
It's a gentle word compared to ratchet.
Ratchet. And I'm thinking of taking some of my text pieces and making new ones somewhat similar, but with big percussion ensembles behind them. I think that's maybe another step.
Best of Chuck.
Ah.
Wait, the reason sort of I asked that question is because Damien's...
Now, which one is Damien?
Well, one of us.
Okay.
Does a best of the bazaar every five shows. And it's a remarkable sort of a collage work which carries you through what the shows have done, even though... And because... Each one of the, because one of those shows contained a best of the previous five, parts of it works its way into the subsequent one. So yeah.
And there is one interview that we did from Toronto and
with Martin Arnold.
Martin Arnold and his quote that he said, "My father, no, I haven't bought shoes since I was 14, and I'm now I think on my ninth generation of using that. That happened 45." Shows
45 shows ago, yep.
That's funny because Tony Nazzo hasn't bought shoes for about that long as well.
How long?
Tony never
buys. Please
say that in a sentence.
Tony Nazzo rarely buys shoes.
Hi, this is John Levin. and you're listening to Calvos and Damien's New Music Bazaar, your red alert for new music.
Thank you, John Levin. And you are listening to The Bazaar on WGDR Plainfield and on the internet at www.goddard.edu/WGDR, or you can go to calvos.org. Take the link from there.
I presume that we stopped this in mid-interview.
We did, because we will thereby increase the tension to find out about Tony Nazzo's shoes.
And also milk another week out of this interview.
Well, sure, because we have more music to play.
Oh, good.
Yes, by Charles Amerikanian. So we don't want to miss the opportunity to hear some of his other stuff. Let's listen to Chululu one more time. And we'll be right back to you. Here it is, Charles Amerikanian's Chululu.
Chululu.
That works.
Chululu, Charles Amerikanian, on today's recontextualized show here on Calvos and Damien. We get to hear different ways in which sounds are decontextualized. We're going to hear a little bit of Marc Bottier coming right on up. Marc was our guest, gosh, it's a couple years now.
Yeah, when we were over there in Paris, that you said maybe wasn't there anymore.
Well, he phrased it that way. I mean, I get, after your essays, I get sensitized to where the appositives are and where the participles dangle.
I see.
So, yeah, so that's why. Well, let's turn to some Marc Bottier, because I wish he would produce another CD. It's so exciting. This one has been played over and over here on the show. Transparence. Let's listen to the first six cuts on here. Slow Scan, Invisible Mirrors, Walk the Sky Above, The Port, Aeolian Harp, and Cybernaut's Flight. Music by Marc Bottier. Thank you. Six pieces by Marc Battier from Transparence. Slow Scan, Miroir Invisible, Walk, The Sky Above the Port, Up Alien, and Cybernauts Flight.
Yummy. They're just dandy.
Definitely.
We want more. Mark, Mark, listen, send more. I don't know if you can't listen because we weren't speaking French, or at least I wasn't.
Yes, you weren't.
Okay, just checking.
Yes.
But he could decontextualize my request and still say.
Correct. And for those wondering what that has to do with voice, by the way, those are all sound poems by Henri Chopin, which he had reworked with his digital recording equipment, so that what you hear is a very sort of musical event rather than anything that sounds like the voice. But it's all 100% voice, as most of the sounds in...
We keep hearing this sound in the background, and I feel as if I should be talking very low.
Yes, you should. Yes.
All right, I will.
Yeah, that's part of Zanuel Glaze, too, a 64-minute piece for decontextualized voices, as it were, and string quartet.
Yes, and available for sale.
Oh, but no more. It's a limited edition, and all but three copies are gone. We offered one, you know, as a contribution during our fundraiser, but alas, the opportunity is over.
It is not over. If someone wants to send money, we'll accept it.
I see.
Perhaps not with a CD in exchange, but we'll still accept the money. Of course, the string quartet is a ringer in there.
Yeah, well, we got to have a few ringers, just like those walking along Australian gravel pits were ringers in Charles Amerikanian's thing. I mean, it's not voices.
Could be.
Could be. How about we listen to a little bit of Panopticon by Diamanda Galas, you know, or Galas, depending on who's pronouncing these days. We tend to walk all over people's names.
Rightfully so.
Well, this is a recording long out of print and apparently coveted and treasured, and we have received emails from people asking us to sell it to them for some outrageous sums of money. Well, too bad. They don't get it.
Oh,
but
although
a little taste of it, however.
Well, they could make an offer and would take it under advisement.
Yes. Diamanda Galas, Panopticon from 1983. Conclusion of Panopticon by Diamanda Galas.
Good, clean fun.
Ah, what a great piece. Very nice and dark and bleak, like everything she does.
makes just cheers me right up.
I can see that.
There's not enough bleak in the music today.
Well, I think we can accommodate that.
You've got some Jackson McClough there.
This is not quite as bleak, but this is still another word artist. Jackson McClough works with his wife and I think another person. And this is from his CD called Open Secrets. This is the first Milarepa Gatha. And at some point in the future, I'll explain what that means, but I don't remember right offhand.
BWD. Well,
Two pieces by Jackson McLow. The first was the first Milarepa Gatha, and I should correct myself that there were only two performers on both of those pieces, both Jackson McLow and his wife Anne Tardos. The first piece was overdubbed three times. And the second piece was the 38th and 39th Meeresgedichte in Memoriam Kurt Schwitters from a 1992 live performance concert.
Oh, I thought I heard a little audience coughing.
In Vienna.
Ooh, Vienna.
And then what happened?
And then it's almost time for the end of the show. We once again thank those folks who contributed over the fundraiser, because that makes it possible for this signal to get out of the studio, both through the air and through that packets of internet data.
Yes.
Yes, and we hope that our fan Mickey is certainly enjoying the show today, because it has such rhythm.
There we go.
Yes, indeed.
Yes.
And we'll go out with a really rhythmic ensemble. This is Furious Pig. And by the way, I got an email from somebody that signed it Furious Pig. Yay!
another fan.
Yes, another fan.
This record was found many, many years ago, and one of the criteria for, or maybe the only criterion for performing this, is that you should play it at any speed you wish.
That's what it says right on it. Play any speed. Gosh, just great. Well, here it is. That's it for the show for today. Go to calvos.org to find out the playlists, should I ever get them back up.
Right.
And here it is. I Don't Like Your Face from Furious Pig. Da 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 da
A production of Baltic Media.